Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Great Partition, The Making of India and Pakistan by Yasmin Khan. Narrated by Jeed Sadi. Timeline of Major Events, 1945 to 1950. 1945. 7th May. End of the Second World War in Europe. 14th to 15th June. Congress Working Committee released from jail. 5th July. General election held in Britain. 25th June to 14th July. First Simla Conference fails to form an executive assembly. 26th July. Labour landslide victory in British elections. 21st August. Viceroy Wavell announces Indian elections to be held in the winter. 5th November. Indian National Army trials start. Mid-December. Polling for the Central and Legislative Assembly elections begins. Late December. Results of elections to Central Legislative Assembly announced. 1946. 11th January. Muslim League celebrate Victory Day. 18th to 23rd February. Royal Indian Navy mutiny. 19th February. Secretary of State for India announces cabinet mission will visit India. 22nd February. Communist Party of India calls for a general strike. 25th March. Cabinet mission arrives in New Delhi. 28th March. Governors report results of the provincial elections. April. Formation of provincial ministries. 3rd to 17th April. Meetings between Indian leaders and the cabinet mission. 7th to 9th April. Meeting of League legislators in New Delhi. 5th to 12th May. Cabinet mission convenes unsuccessful tripartite meeting in Simla. 16th May. Cabinet mission puts forward its own federal solution in a statement, broadcast on radio to Indian people. 26th June. Negotiations over an interim government fail. 29th June. Cabinet mission leaves India. 8th August. Viceroy invites Congress to proceed in an interim government without the League's participation. 16th to 18th August. The League's Direct Action Day ends in violence in Calcutta. 24th August. Viceroy broadcasts on the radio regarding formation of an interim government. 2nd September. Interim government takes office without the League's membership. Members are sworn into office. Early September. Ahmedabad, Allahabad, Bombay, violent clashes. Mid-October. Massacres in Noakhali and East Bengal. 26th October. League members join the interim government. October to November. Massacres in Bihar. 6th November to 2nd March. Gandhi remains in Noakhali. Early November. Garmukteshwar killing in United Provinces. 9th December. Constituent Assembly formed without League members, adjourned until 20th January. 1947. 24th January. Muslim League starts agitation for civil liberties in Punjab. 20th February. Attlee's statement that the British intend to grant independence not later than June 1948. 2nd March. Resignation of the Unionist Coalition Prime Minister, Khizr Tiwana, in Punjab. March. Widespread destruction in Lahore and Amritsar. Gandhi goes to Bihar. 15th April. Joint appeal for peace made by Gandhi and Jinnah. May. Mass violence in Lahore. End May. Widespread fighting and destruction of villages in Gurgaon. 3rd June. The plan to partition the subcontinent is agreed and made public. 20th June. Bengal and Punjab legislative assemblies vote on partitioning the two provinces. June. Violence in Lahore, Amritsar, and Punjabi villages. 1st July. Partition Council formed, takes over from a special committee of the cabinet. 1st to 10th July. Serious rioting in Lahore and Calcutta. 8th July. Radcliffe arrives in India. 16th to 24th July. Bengal Boundary Commission holds public sittings in Bengal. 20th to 30th July. Punjab Boundary Commission holds public sittings in Lahore. 28th July. Indian Constituent Assembly Subcommittee votes against separate electorates for Muslims in India. 14th August. Independence Day in Pakistan. 15th August. Independence Day in India. 17th August. New ferocity in Punjab. First British troops sail from Bombay. Boundary Commission award is announced. 18th August. Prime Ministers Nehru and Likhat Ali Khan issue joint statement from Amritsar after visiting affected areas. 28th August. Nehru announces the Indian government will have to rethink policy regarding transfer of populations. 31st August. Punjab Boundary Force dissolved, replaced by two military evacuation operations. United Council for Relief and Warfare formed under the coordination of Lady Mountbatten. 2nd September. Jinnah appeals for help for Pakistani refugees. 3rd September. Joint Dominion Conference held in Lahore. 7th September. K.C. Niyogi appointed first Indian Minister for Relief and Rehabilitation of Refugees. Emergency Cabinet Committee established in India. 19th September. Iftikhar ad-Din sworn in as West Punjab Refugees Minister. 21st September. Joint Statement of Nehru Likhat Ali from New Delhi. 21st November. Numbers of evacuations in Punjab exceed 8 million people. 6th December. Inter-Dominion Conference, Lahore, Operation to Recover and Restore Abducted Women agreed. December. A.K. Azad recommends Indian Muslims join the Congress at a convention in Delhi. 14th to 15th December. All India Muslim League Council meeting, Karachi. The League splits into two branches, the Pakistan Muslim League and the Indian Union Muslim League. 1948. 12th January. Atrocity against trainload of refugees at Gujarat, Pakistan. 30th January. Assassination of Mahatma Gandhi. Ban on the Rashtriya Swayamsevak Sangh, RSS, and Muslim National Guard in India. 14th February. 2 weeks of mourning in India end. Gandhi's ashes immersed at Allahabad. 28th February. Last British troops in India depart. March. Refugee local conflicts in Godhra, Gujarat. Inter-Dominion Arbitral Tribunal meets. Early July. Hindu-Muslim riots in Bombay. July. Over 15,000 abducted women recovered by both governments since December 1947. Permit system introduced in West Pakistan. 12th September. Jinnah dies. Mid-September. Police action in Hyderabad and accession of the Nizam to India. 30th September. Indian banknotes no longer legal tender in Pakistan. November. RSS initiates civil disobedience against the ban on the organization. 11th November. Inter-Dominion Agreement sets out terms for recovery of abducted women. 15th December. Godse and Narayan Apte hanged for Gandhi's murder. 21st to 23rd December. Idols found installed in the temple at Ayodhya, Uttar Pradesh. December. RSS begin a campaign against Golwalkar's detention. 1949. 1st January. United Nations-sponsored ceasefire announced in Kashmir. 19th February. Tara Singh jailed for leading agitation for a Sikh homeland. 12th March. Objectives resolution adopted by Pakistani Constituent Assembly. May. Indian Constituent Assembly votes against reserved seats for religious minorities. 29th to 30th July. All India Refugee Conference, New Delhi. 12th July. Ban on RSS lifted in India. 19th December. Abducted Persons, Recovery and Restoration Bill passed in India. 1950. 26th January. Inauguration of the Republic of India. January to March. Attacks on non-Muslims in East Bengal, especially in Khulna, Chittagong, Barishal, and Sylhet. Early March. Attacks on Muslims in West Uttar Pradesh. 8th April. Nehru and Liaquat Ali sign pact on protection of minorities in New Delhi, followed by further talks in Karachi. 19th April. Nehru accepts resignation of K.C. Niyogi and S.P. Mukherjee owing to disagreements over Pakistan. 28th June. Agreement signed on settlement of movable assets lost during partition. 30th July. All India Refugee Conference, Delhi. 15th December. Death of Vallabhai Patel, Indian Deputy Prime Minister. Preface to the new edition. A 3-year-old boy, dressed in a red t-shirt and shorts, still wearing his little shoes, lying face down on a beach in Bodrum, Turkey. Photographs and footage of Alan Kurdi's small, still body, washed up on the Mediterranean shore in September 2015, appeared across the world, stunning a global audience. His became the image that defined the contemporary refugee crisis. Just as, during partition, images of packed trains or haunted faces in refugee camps became a form of visual shorthand for the human suffering of 1947. Alan's family was from Syria, and they had been displaced several times during the war there. They had settled in Turkey, but were attempting to reach another destination, possibly intending ultimately to get to Canada, when Alan, his mother, and his brother drowned in the Mediterranean. The Kurdi's story reflects how important it is to understand refugees through their individual histories, as well as through their collective stories. The photograph of the lifeless child also reminds us that powerful images can evoke both personal and collective histories. The Great Partition was published 10 years ago. Since then, refugees and displacement have regularly made the front pages of European newspapers and have provoked much intense political debate. More than 11 million refugees have fled their homes in Syria since the start of the conflict in 2011, about the same number as were displaced by partition in 1947. It is one of the largest refugee crises in world history. Many have been internally displaced within Syria, whilst the majority have fled to neighboring countries such as Turkey, Lebanon, Jordan, Iraq, and Egypt. A smaller minority have attempted to make forbidden and dangerous journeys to Western Europe in the backs of trucks, walking across treacherous landscapes, or packed on overcrowded rafts. This refugee crisis, the result of civil war and a Middle Eastern regional struggle, is clearly different in numerous ways from the partition of India in 1947. But it seems ever more important to connect partition to the world we live in now, to try and use its lessons and stories to inform a more humanistic understanding of displacement. Why does it happen? What sort of lasting change do mass refugee movements bring? And how can the partition of India be placed within this wider world history? Partition histories are so often treated as unique and set apart from any comparative context. On the one hand, we now know a lot about partition. Scholars have pored over its causes and repercussions, sifted nearly every available document, and collected oral testimonies from refugees and victims of violence from all over the subcontinent. Any history of partition relies on this rich body of information and on the many well-grounded and valuable histories that have been written on the subject. Yet most studies do not look sideways to other cases. A certain regional myopia on the part of historians has been a block to understanding partition as a global event with very real and important commonalities with other histories, even those of the 1940s. The West has been as much a witness to refugee movements in the 20th century as elsewhere. During the 1940s, refugees were being created and left in the wake of the Second World War everywhere. The global nature of displacement at that time is a phenomenon which I did not originally address in this book, yet it seems ever more important to me now. Partition was part of a whole world being made anew as nations and continents recovered and rebuilt after the end of a devastating war. Displacement was one of the defining features of the period across the globe. People moved in response to violence or the threat of violence. They were also moved because of planned transfers of whole populations en bloc, though sometimes such transfers were unanticipated and a result of spontaneous reactions to war. For instance, a breathtaking 90 million Chinese relocated during the Second World War, mostly farther into the interior from eastern and central China. Elsewhere, transfers of populations were planned and part of political strategy. In Europe, some 60 million were displaced, with the refugee crisis peaking in the years immediately after the war, when, in addition to the displacement of Jews, Poles, and many from the Baltic states, some 12 to 13 million Germans were expelled from Eastern and Central Europe. In 1948, 850,000 displaced people still lived in Europe's refugee camps, among them Poles, Czechs, Latvians, Lithuanians, Estonians, and Ukrainians. Some of these expulsions and displacements were unplanned, but many others were the result of decisions made by politicians and bureaucrats. Not only Hitler and Stalin with their genocidal intentions, but also adherents to the logic of population exchange, many of whom were political leaders. The seeds had been planted by the first internationally ratified exchange of population that occurred with the Treaty of Lausanne of 1923, following the First World War, which formally agreed the exchange of Muslims from Greece and Orthodox Christians from Anatolia. From that point, it became legitimate to approve population exchange to remedy the more complex problems of minorities within faltering, socially diverse empires. Ethnic homogenization, combining complex populations and rearranging them along homogeneous lines, became widely accepted as an ideal solution to the troublesome complexity of multi-ethnic empires. Proximity to genocidal violence often, though not always, accompanied this flight. In the case of India's partition, although the original intention was to retain minorities on both sides of the border, questions still remain about how far such ideas about population exchange had affected South Asian and British policymakers. After all, the UK, alongside the United States and the USSR, had given succor to the idea at the Potsdam Conference in July 1945, when the Big Three agreed that the victorious Allied powers should facilitate the transfer of Germans from Poland, Czechoslovakia, and Hungary. Historians have only just started to tease out these European ideological lineages and their connections to South Asia's partition. The global lexicons upon which the British and South Asians drew when envisaging the future are still not fully understood. Partition did not happen without being inspired by emergent notions of what the future world was going to look like. At a time when empires were being hammered into nation-states, not only in South Asia, but globally, this surely provided a context in which political interlocutors interpreted demands for Pakistan. Similarly, the connections between partition and other kinds of constitution-making and state-building, at a time when people engaged in creating the new state of Israel, or debated federations in Southeast Asia, or juggled the creation of citizenship rights from the remnants of older multi-ethnic empires, are vital in grasping partition's true place in global history. And yet, partition was defined by national boundaries far more than other examples of human displacement in the same decade. International organizations had already begun to tackle refugee crises as international problems to be resolved through internationalism and multinational agreements. From 1943 to 1948, the United Nations Relief and Rehabilitation Agency, UNRRA, which foreshadowed the work of the United Nations, saw 44 nations join together to try and alleviate the war's consequences for civilians, employing over 12,000 people from around the world and spending nearly $4 billion. And not just in Europe, many millions went to China, too. But South Asia's crisis fell between the cracks of decolonization and post-war retrenchment. Most refugees stayed within the subcontinent in 1947, although the diaspora and future generations of the diaspora were certainly scarred by partition's effects. The Indian and Pakistani refugees were almost entirely reliant on themselves or on the granting of relief from the Indian or Pakistani states. The role of the international community in the aftermath of partition and the distribution of relief were minimal. It was in the years between 1947 and 1951 that the United Nations grappled with who could be labeled a refugee and what his or her rights should be. But in South Asia, partition had already happened. India and Pakistan had faced the challenge alone. The British projected partition as a domestic problem with a local and age-old genesis. The crisis of 1947 was concomitantly resolved through the individual actions of the two new nation-states without much international involvement or comment, apart from some limited support from smaller charitable organizations. As a consequence, Indian and Pakistani leaders did make some extraordinary interventions to assist refugees after 1947, and this relief, alongside the work of charities and religious organizations, became a way for states to claim people as their own, to craft new ideas about nationhood and citizenship. Refugees could be considered part of national projects, and the distribution of relief and assistance and the extension of citizenship rights could be folded into projects of nation-building and development. Thus, the partition story had, and still has, for some Indians and Pakistanis, a redemptive and undeniably nationalistic element, despite all the tragedy. Partition's events and memories can be entwined with both local and national narratives, and this gives them particular piquancy and power. As the scholar Gyanendra Pandey has very long recognized and analyzed in his own work on partition. The national or regional context in which partition is nearly always seen is an obstacle to unearthing these transnational commonalities and similarities, which might be buried in partition histories. This is, to my mind, unfortunate, as it may risk intellectually reinforcing the nation-state borders inscribed by Cyril Ratcliffe in 1947. It also tends to underscore the idea that partition was an exceptional aberration, though at the time many others in the world also suffered from displacement and loss. The rendering of partition as a uniquely devastating event works to place it beyond the bounds of comparative accounts, and perhaps to silence its echoes in contemporary global politics. The post-colonial states have seemed to set themselves apart in this matter, too. Neither India nor Pakistan signed the 1951 United Nations Convention relating to the status of refugees, or ratified the 1967 Protocol, despite the fact that they have both absorbed many millions of refugees due to other regional conflicts since 1947. The experiences of the Tibetan, Afghan, Rohingya, or Bangladeshi refugees, all later 20th century casualties of regional conflict in South Asia, are just beginning to be profitably integrated with partition histories. This matters because the rich historiography of partition and the sheer volume of books and articles about it are a potential resource for those working on other parts of the world, especially for those trying to make sense of refugees in a wider sense. Social scientists, the lawyers, sociologists, and development experts doing the practical work of refugee protection today, and historians researching historical events like partition, have often been speaking different conceptual languages. There is a sense of disjuncture between historical approaches to the past and social scientific approaches to the present. Historical insights can inform contemporary responses to refugees by challenging stereotypes, providing a lineage and history to contemporary crises, showing the power of individual voices, and describing the complexity of these human traumas in all their many facets. Peter Gatrell has advocated an approach that places refugees in just such a historical context, while also staying critically alert to the ways in which the definition of refugee has been constructed. The refugee label is, of course, a limiting one, applied in various ways, and not always warmly accepted by displaced people themselves. In future, historians and other scholars may find more ways of building bridges between the writing of histories of epic events, such as partition, and the contemporary analysis of urgent refugee relief. Since I wrote this book 10 years ago, academics, artists, writers, and journalists have filled millions of pages on the subject of partition. The first ever museum dedicated to partition opened in 2016 in Amritsar, housed in the old town hall. There has been ever more interest in understanding why partition happened and its ripple effect.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?